Hello and welcome back to the Soapbox Podcast. It's good to be back again. And you're even lucky that you're getting a podcast this week because, well, there's many events that might interrupt. How are you doing, Dad? It's good to have you here.
Yes, it's good to be here. I've been traveling the countryside. You would have heard the three podcasts we generate. They're available on our podcast hosting sites, wherever you may like to go. Then I've been up to Northern Australia Big Camp, which is at the top end of Australia, and spent the week there talking to the primaries and doing workshops. So my body's saying it's been from summer to winter to summer again, now back to Kurrumbong winter. So yes, I've had a busy run around too, so it's good to stop and do a podcast.
Yeah, what's happening in your life, Andrew? What's happening in my life? Well, I'm on the edge of many things, but particularly Michaela, my wife, is due to give birth at quite literally any moment. So we are recording now because we both had a moment to record. And if we all of a sudden finish up and don't release anything, well, then you might know why. But yeah, so got all of that happening, and I've settled into my new church on the Central Coast at Foresters Beach, and got that role underway. And now I'm about to start at least 2 weeks of paternity leave. So it's all exciting and it's all happening at once.
Yes, yeah, so Andrew's becoming a dad and I'm becoming a granddad for the first time. So it's all very exciting as all of that progresses, and wishing Andrew and Michaela all the best as that event occurs sometime. So if the door opens in your office, we know it's time to stop the podcast.
And leave, yes. But in the meantime, today we were debating what we wanted to talk about, and there was a few different things that we threw onto the wall of things we can speak about. But what we want to speak about is accessibility, and accessibility in church. And really, you put up a post today which triggered my mind thinking about all of this, which was talking about making church accessible throughout the week. Obviously, opening the church up, making sure the church has stuff happening every single day of the week, and yet got my mind going to another type of accessibility, which is for people with disabilities, and creating a church that is open to those people and is able to nurture and worship and grow with people of all ages, of all abilities. And as Christians, we, at least in our faith tradition, I hope, and I believe, and I personally believe that church should be a place where all can come and all can worship and all can access equally spirituality, fellowship, growth in community. So we want to really have a look at this accessibility space. And to kick off our discussion, I've got a couple of statistics for you. The first one is that in Australia, autism spectrum disorder, which is a disability, is,
oh, no, I wouldn't call it a disorder, by the way, but keep going.
Well, it's there's lots of different, according to the DSM-5, is a disorder. I'm speaking as someone with high functioning autism. Yeah. The autism prevalence rate in Australia is expected to be around about 1 in 70 people across Australia, which is a very significant figure, which means that if we have 25 million people, we're going to have 250, 300, maybe even 500,000 people who have autism, which means that people you go past in the street every single day have autism. And that's not even starting to account for people with blindness. There's going to be about 500,000 people by 2030 that are blind, according to the estimates from Vision Australia. And there's all kinds of other disabilities as well, people with hearing impairments, so on and so forth. So how do we create a church that is accessible to all people and is able to be accessed by people with disabilities? That's kind of the big driving question I have for us today.
And I guess you tie that with the idea that we as a church have been raised up to take the gospel to every kindred, mm-hmm. every tongue, every nation, every people. Then if we're excluding a whole lot of people that are on what you call the autism spectrum, then are we really doing our mission effectively in today's day and age? Is a question we could debate probably the whole of the podcast anyway. But yes, we're called to reach everyone. What does that look like?
Yeah, and for me, this is an area I'm a little bit passionate about, not just because of my personal experience, but because Michaela is being a teacher, has constantly got a lot of kids in her class, autism spectrum, and all different varying levels. And I could spend 30 minutes going through the intricacies of autism, but essentially all of these different individuals function differently in whatever space that they are in. And it's not to say that it's wrong. It's not to say that it's against the expected norms, but lots of these kids and adults function in a slightly different way. And as I've observed many of Michaela's classes and considered my own experience, I've begun to realize that our churches themselves are not designed to cater for people with disability. More often than not, accessibility was not in any way thought about in church design. The flow, yes, everything's wrong.
I would agree with you on that. And maybe the first learning point we bring out in our podcast today is that churches could go on an excursion and observe how classrooms in most of our modern schools run today, and observe how kids are no longer glued to the seats and rows, but there's all sorts of ways that they can learn and engage. And often there are individual learning programs for some of the kids that may need to happen as well. So the schools are doing all they can to cater to the various different learning needs so that every child has access to learning. How much more should we think about how every child and every adult, by the way, every person that comes to church has access to the gospel on an equal footing?
Yeah, and I want to give credit to our church, the Adventist church as a whole, because this is a space that has been thought about a little bit, but not that much. So there used to be a ministry, I forgot what the name of it was, that was all about ministering to the deaf and blind in our church. Yes. And that got shifted into what is now called Adventist Possibility Ministries, I think 2 or 3 annual councils ago, which is during the middle of the year, each year, all of the big wigs get together and decide what's happening in our church for that next year. So that was rolled into Adventist Possibility Ministries a couple of annual councils ago and was confirmed at the last session. And so Adventist Possibility Ministries, as a sounds, is all about ministering to people to the deaf, the blind, the physically immobile, those who have mental health challenges, orphans and vulnerable children, people mourning, supported caregivers, so on and so forth. So it's a pretty wide umbrella that the Adventist Church has created to try and minister to. But as I've done some research, there's only a director for this ministry if I follow our chain up to the GC.
Yep.
There's only a director for this ministry at the head office in Washington. I couldn't find anyone at our division or at our union from what I could look at.
And you'll find that in general at sessions, it seems to be that the youth director in the past was appointed as the blind and hearing impaired director. And you can remember when you were a younger child, that used to be
blind camp.
Blind camps. That was a great opportunity for those that were blind, and it's a great outreach activity, but also for those that came with counsellors. It really heightened the need to be aware of that. But you're right, with this Adventist Possibility Ministries, they've broadened it so much that it seems to have just sat there at Washington, and I haven't heard the flow down at all. And no one's talking about it, at least at a local division or conference level.
Yeah, and so for me, this has kind of triggered a bit of a righteous indignation within me, going, how can I create spaces for people that need to be able to access church? And so I want to focus now a bit more on autism, because I think autism is something that we can define and talk about a bit better than some of the other challenges. There's hearing impaired, which I as most people would know, you're deaf, Dad, and a few of your brothers are as well.
Yep.
And that has its own challenges, which you've spoken about on Facebook before. But for people with autism, church can be a really overwhelming experience. And
well, I mean, most most church services are greater than the 75 decibel level when you listen to the music, not just the contemporary music, by the way. There's a classic story from years gone by, or the past, where I actually measured a choir singing the Hallelujah chorus, and they went well and truly over the 75 decibel level, and they were quite surprised when I told them that they had. And loud noise and lots of people can be overwhelming for someone with autism.
Yeah, and I want to say every single person with autism has different sensory feelings and different things that trigger them. So for me, noise is, as an adult, noise doesn't bother me. But certain types of light, like fluoros, if your church still has the energy inefficient fluoros in it, now's the time for you to switch to LEDs. Because fluoros, for many people with autism, actually just give them a migraine. Their brain is processing the information differently, and the AC flicker that the light gives at about 52 hertz a second is enough to give that person a migraine. Or, for example, if we get more to a more intricate thing, it's the way in which the socialization happens at church. For me, one of the most uncomfortable moments at church is when the person doing the welcome stands up the front and says, all right, now can everybody stand up and go and find someone new and say hello to them? Now, very well-intentioned, and I agree with trying to make new connections, and there's other ways to do that. But in that moment, what it does is it forces interaction upon people who haven't been able to give permission or understand what was going on, and it creates an uncomfortable moment for people with autism where they feel like they are either left out or they are so overwhelmed they can't process how to navigate that situation. And everyone will be saying that's really easy and really simple, but for someone with autism, that's a massive roadblock,
and would probably prevent them coming back to that church again, because I think, oh, they're going to do this regularly, they would be reticent to come into the sanctuary until that bit's over, and stay outside or not come at all.
I recently had some Bible studies with a older person who, from my non-official diagnosis, was definitely on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And they told me that they avoided church until after the music, so they didn't have to interact with anyone and they could just listen to the sermon, which is kind of sad, right? It was because they knew they were going to have to interact with people at some point in the first 30 minutes of the program in a way that they didn't have any control over. And that's not to say that they didn't want to socialize. It was the structure of that moment didn't allow for them to engage in the way that they wanted to.
Yeah, and so I guess the question then is, well, what do we do? How do we as leaders think? How do we create spaces where everyone feels welcome in the worship space and in church itself? I mean, Sabbath class will also be confronting sometimes for some of these people to think they have to go to a smaller class and actually contribute to that. Could be overwhelming to them as well. And even things like communion, foot washing, and the emblems would be overwhelming as to how it's done. And yeah, where do we start and stop? And what do churches need to do to include those who are neurodivergent or on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, and it's a really, really big, broad thing. I'm not going to give you one simple answer. I think it's a diversity of options. But one little thing that I've done recently, and I picked it up from a church I was a part of and I've now adopted it, is what I call a sticker Sabbath, mm-hmm. which is the person doing the welcoming or the welcoming team for that week. As people come into church, they write people's names down on a name tag and give everyone stickers with their names on it. And it does two or three things. It helps kick some goals in terms of encouraging people to speak to one another. It ticks another goal, and the Adventists that have been at church for 20 years but still don't know the other Adventists that have been at church for 20 years' name, it allows them to get to know each other. But also for me, as someone on the spectrum, what it does is it means that I don't have to go on around every single time and ask an awkward question of, hey, what is your name, and have people react differently. It's, hey, Jill, how are you going? How can I? It reduces the social friction that exists. So it allows people to go deeper more quickly and to go beyond the socially awkward moment that people with autism or neurodivergence or even just regular people might struggle to do. And so it's, that reduces a barrier. Another thing is to think about your worship service and consider whether there are elements in your service that are going to be a trigger for someone with autism. I'm not saying remove it, but I'm saying just think about ways in which it can be mitigated. By that, I mean create a moment where if you are wanting to get people to interact, give them a very specific question. So say, hey, turn to the person next to you and ask them what they had for breakfast and yep. what is their favorite part about being at church. They give them a prompt even on the screen. So don't make it an open-ended, overwhelming moment, but give some structure, which not just the people with autism will appreciate. Everyone is going to appreciate having the two questions they need to ask on the screen or given to them so that they can go to someone and say, hey, what is your name? What did you have for breakfast today? What is your favorite thing about coming to church? That's kind of for me. That's kind of two very simple things for me around that. And that's the really structural elements when it comes to dealing with that.
I like that idea. And I'd also suggest the idea of sensory spaces, because everyone's a little bit different in the way they react. And this is where intergenerational learning comes in a little bit as well. And realizing that the church is not just a place for rows, but it could be different designs that allow for different sensory spaces where people can go where they're comfortable. And maybe having some tables with some fiddles on there. Often people with on the spectrum like to fiddle with fidget spinners and things like that, and Lego. And I know that your mother, she can't sit through a sermon, but she can if she's colouring in with her watercolours. So she takes her watercolours and a colouring book to church, and she sits there in watercolours and is able to take in the sermon while she's colouring in. Now, some people say, oh, that's irreverent, and she's not focused. But no, she is. It's a way to focus, is to have some sort of sensory output that she's doing while she's listening. And I think that breaking down some of those barriers of where this is how worship is, to thinking about sensory spaces and what that looks like, even the cushions sometimes and weighted type objects that they can hold, those sorts of things help those with sensory needs as well.
Yes, and myself as the pastor, even I have to fiddle and do something because I can't be on my phone swiping. I need to find something else to distract me while I'm listening. Like this last Sabbath, the sermon went a little long and I was like starting to need to go and do something else because I couldn't focus for that length of time without fiddling. And that's okay. I'm not meaning to be rude. It's just a thing that needs to happen. So I'm really grateful I have, of all things, my Apple Watch, because it's got a digital crown and I just sit there spinning the digital crown. But the thing for me is, I think what we've touched on is some really great tips, but I think we can expand it to everyone, because ultimately everyone learns differently. And if we're going to create churches that are intergenerational, we need to be willing to touch on each of the different intelligences. And I'm not talking about the old, some people are visual learners and some people are audio or like oral learners. I'm talking about as different intelligences. So some people are really smart at doing something physical like construction. Other people are really smart at those deep thinking tasks. Other people are really smart dealing with very specific areas. So we need to be able to create spaces where we are touching on each of the different senses that we have as humans so that each of those different intelligences can be engaged.
And that's where Gracelink was about to be superseded, and I hope the new one's written the same, but it was written to keep that in mind, and active learning was involved, and the multiple intelligences were also there, so that by the time that the hour of finishing Sabbath school, the kids had picked up hopefully the main point of the lesson in their own way, in their own time. And I guess this is where we need to think about is the audio event seems to be the main event, and three hymns and a prayer, really the best way, not just those who are on the spectrum, but all of us, and to assume that everyone has the same access to the sights, sounds, tastes. And smells, and how can we make the chapel a
absolutely, and
is from the youngest, so that they can get their lunch. Yeah, maybe we need to think about 12 o'clock. You didn't get there, you missed out, and so. For the pastor to sit down 12 or soon after and allow people to leave and get their lunch was making the worship service accessible for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's all those different nuances to it. And I know this week I noticed that very same thing, in that the moment that church overran in my context, it caused a little bit of friction because it was impeding upon the needs of many people in my community. And yes, it detracted from the worship experience because they were stressing about everything else. And so removing those elements of friction are really important. In this book here, which we were talking about before, called Eight Great Smarts by Kathy Koch, PhD, there's a little bit about spirituality. And this is what it says. I'm going to read two or three quotes because I think it's really important. Body smart children connect with God best when they are physically involved during worship, and it might be important to them. However, be careful not to judge whether someone is body smart when it comes to spiritual growth, based on whether they sway, clap, lift their hands during worship. And then it continues on in another section where it says, because body smart children learn by doing and by experiencing things for themselves, the sacraments of communion and baptism and practices like financial giving can be very important. Yep. You may want to attend baptism services, have children put money in the offering plate, take advantage of communion as a very important teaching time. And then it continues on. Family devotions are also more effective when you plan something for children to do. Anything that keeps their hands busy will help. Allow them to stand, pace, or wiggle in their chair using drama, action, and object lessons in shorter teaching times will help. So on and so on. Now, there's all different smarts this book goes through, but I really loved that bit because it reminds me of myself, in that I had to be moving in order to take anything in. And it didn't matter whether it was church or school. If I wasn't moving, nothing was going in. And I remember very specifically being paced around the car park of McLean Church.
Yes.
And paced around some of the car parks down in Melbourne. But particularly I remember being in the worship service and still wiggling. And the only reason I was pacing around the car park in those churches is because the members couldn't handle me moving around the sanctuary, right? But imagine if all of our members could handle children wriggling in the worship service, and I think that would immediately create a space that is more accessible for everyone in those church communities.
Yes, and I think things like Lego and Play-Doh and some of those sorts of sensory items are intergenerational, the fact that dad, mum, and the kids can be involved in that together. And some churches I know actually what they call pray play centers right in the middle of the church, where there's tables where kids can actually play the worship service and be involved in building, creating, making, and taking in the sermon as they go. And it's placing kids right in the center. And I think we need to have a debate around what is worship and what is reverence, and how everyone is welcome in worship and what that looks like. And that's going to take some slow nudges and slow changes, but I think it's a debate and a conversation each church needs to have. I think also might need to get my brother Brendan on sometime, because he's done a lot of work around God and pictures of God. and how different people relate to God in different ways with their picture of God as well. And maybe we need to get Brendan on to have a chat about that, because when you understand different people's pictures of God and how they relate to God, that makes it a bit more understanding. It's not just sitting in a pew and listening to a sermon. Others might be in nature, others might be down by the beach, others might be doing private devotions and reading the Bible, but others might be drawing it or painting it. And the eighth great smart thing really as well is that everyone relates to God and the picture of God in different ways. And once we understand that, it may help us think more about how we make worship accessible to everyone.
Absolutely. And I think the way some churches do life groups really well, in that they've got lifestyle groups and Bible study groups, so you can go play tennis, connect with God with the church community playing tennis, or you can connect up and have a Bible study. That might be your jam. You can go cycling, all those whole heap of different things. I know at my church, we've got tennis, gym, walking group. They go walking every Tuesday, often around Sydney, but they do long walks every single Tuesday. There's a Bible study group on a whack. There's all these different opportunities for people to connect with God in different ways together or separately, depending on what your preferred way is. And I think what Brendan has done work on in that space is really important. And if we took it a step further, I think people with autism create their picture of God differently. And this is my hypothesis. And I'd love to do a hint. I'd love to do some research into this space. If you're an Avondale lecturer, give me a ring. But I'd love to do some research into this space and look at how do people with autism create their picture of God and their spirituality? And as an extra question to that is, what does spiritual growth look like for a neurodivergent person? Because we know that their psychological development, their psychosocial development is different to the rest of society, to what would be expected. And there's some great studies going on in Western Australia and South Australia at the moment on early autism intervention with babies under the age of 6 months, and changing the ways that mothers parent them and respond to their cues differently, and seeing if that changes the speed of development for people with autism. So that's a longitudinal study that's just kicked off, that the Australian government has begun. And I'd love to look at something similar inside of our church land. At how does that spiritual walk, that psychosocial growth happen in a slightly different way? And I think we would see some differences.
And that's a largely unexplored area in children's spirituality, but also all our spirituality. But I think that's a well worthwhile area looking at, because often we think that we have the formula and everyone just needs to listen to the formula, rather than thinking that, no, well, some will listen to that one, but others won't. And as I say, people do this spirituality differently. Which brings me back to that quote you put up from the Eight Great Smarts. You talked about communion. You, Andrew, you gave your life to Jesus during a primary Sabbath school communion service. And you'd been tons of Sabbath schools, but it was that one which was multi-sensory, and the past was involved in others, and it was yours truly. And you gave your life to Jesus at that event, which is interesting, because you don't think about doing an altar call at a communion service, but that's how you responded.
But, okay, there's a whole little tangent we can go down there, which looks at the theology of communion, because isn't communion a reaffirmation of each individual spiritual walk with Christ, at least according to what we believe as a church? It's the symbols, yes, right? And it's a reaffirmation. And baptism is just a symbol, and it is they're meant to be the same root thing. So of course we should be doing a call or a opportunity for people to give their life to God at foot washing, because we do practice open communion. But that's a whole nother space.
Darius and the Deuteron to talk about that one sometime, because they've done a lot of talk about children's access to the communion service in Adventist context. But
absolutely. Yeah. But I think that you're exactly right. What you've identified for me was that it was that physical act of understanding the symbols. And for someone with autism, to get really deep into the psychology, particularly a young person with autism, the object and the connection to the symbol and the way in which that is explained and understood is a really effective way to communicate the gospel and communicate God's love to young people and old people with autism.
I think research, as you say, Abinell, let's just listen, get Andrew involved in this because that's where he wants to go. But I think it will open up a whole lot of understanding and thinking for everyone to look at some research in that area and reaching not just those who are on the autism spectrum, but anybody's on a neurodivergent spectrum. And I think that we all are somewhere on that spectrum, I must say. I often find sitting in a sermon listening boring, and I've got to have something else that I'm thinking about or doing as well while I'm taking the sermon in, especially if it gets past 25, 30, 40 minutes. The longer the sermon goes, the worse it becomes.
Same for me. Same for me. Yeah, I think there's a lot more to do there. And my big assumption is that if we can improve the way we communicate with people on the spectrum, we'll improve the way we communicate with everyone. And I believe that our Bible studies, our evangelism, our church services, our everything that we consider to be a part of our gospel sharing can be improved if we understand how to make adjustments for different levels and different ways of thinking. It's not just a take it off the shelf, here's the 27 Bible studies, 28 Bible studies, and you're right to get dunked. No, it's we actually need to make adjustments depending on who we're talking with and how they learn. And they might learn best by going for a Bible study whilst walking through the bush, and I say adjust accordingly.
And that's where we need to, I guess, as pastors and as leaders, be more observant of what's working, what's not working. Don't just assume that sitting down and writing dot points on each question in a Bible study is going to get the message across. And it could be the acting together, doing together, surfing together, whatever that might be, and those discussions along the way that may help. And when you look at Jesus' teaching, by the way, a lot of his teaching wasn't in a synagogue. Yes, he did go to the synagogue, but a lot of his teaching was along the way as they were doing things. And if you like, fidgeting and harvesting wheat or walking along the shore or fishing or all those things. So a lot of active learning involved in what Jesus did and how he taught. And maybe this be a theology of learning done from the methods Jesus used as well at some point in time. I know that a friend of mine, Jason Santos, who I met over at Intergenerate, is doing a whole theology around the theology of play and how when people play together, the image of God, he believes, is revealed more strongly and fully than just sitting in a worship service listening to a preacher preach. And that was challenging for me, but I think there's a lot to think about around the theology of play.
Well, Michaela and I have done 3 puzzles in a week and we're on to number 4. I think that says something as well. But
you guys are obviously waiting for an event as well. So on that note, we should look at finishing up as well because the event is coming.
It is, but I guess what I'm saying with that is that they're great moments to connect, right? And connect over something physical. And I think there's a lot more we can discuss here. I think we've touched on a few big areas, a few tips, and some few areas for future thinking around the way in which pastors and leaders and members can operate. And if you've listened to this, I encourage you to do some reading, discover the different levels of autism. There's lots of different levels and different styles of autism. Look into sensory processing disorders. Not just people with autism have those. There's lots of kids that have a sensory processing disorder, lots of adults too. And I want to finish on this little illustration. As pastors and as elders and as leaders and as members in the church, you will have inevitably have heard about that random member or that random person who is a member at church, is very committed to God, but hasn't attended in a very long time because church just isn't their thing. And I would like to posit that the reason that church just isn't their thing is because the church itself was not designed or was not in a, did not operate in such a way that they felt like that they could be safe and that they could function at church. They still love God. They're still a good Adventist. They still, whatever it is, there's always those stories. But often my experience has been that those people are quite often neurodivergent in some description. And when I go visit with them, I discover that they haven't attended because of something that was just too much for them. And what a blessing it might be if we could create spaces where those people could re-engage in fellowship in a safe way.
And I like to include also saying, just asking that question means you're on the road to discovering something new and beautiful, and just making effort sometimes to realize that people in our church don't all think or believe or process in the same way that we do is the first step towards thinking about, well, what could this look like, and to reimagine church, but also, as you said, not just church on Sabbath, but also the fact that Romans 12 calls us to do that every day, and walking, talking, playing tennis, whatever it might look like, is another way to connect and moving beyond the four walls into our community, into our homes and spaces is a way to go. And I like to plug, by the way, in conclusion, the Intergenerate Conference. Mm-hmm. So I think that what they're onto may also be helpful in this area as well. That's coming up soon, right across the country and New Zealand. And so intergenerate.org.au, and you'll find the events there. David Senos is coming out to present on the gospel for all ages. So well worth registering and coming to one of those events.
Awesome. Well, with that, I think it's time to say over and out, and have a wonderful afternoon, and I'll see you tonight.
See you later.